Eva Cha, Vishnu Bhakti Bhakta Smrita Daiva Asuras Tadvapariya. That means the devotees and the demons have always existed since the beginning of creation, and the Vishnu Bhaktas, they are the devotees, and the Padma Purana says the demons are the opposite. They're the non-devotees. They're not devotees of Vishnu. So the difference between them is they take shelter of different potencies of the Lord. By nature, both the demons and the devotees are jivas. Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita, that jiva-bhuta-sanatana, mamaivamso jiva-loke jiva-bhuta-sanatana, that the soul which is there in the body of the demon or the body of the devotee is the same. It's part and parcel of Krishna. But the jiva potency is the marginal potency. The Lord has his spiritual potency and he has his material potency. And between the two of them is the jiva, the marginal potency. And if the jiva tends to identify with the spiritual potency of the Lord, then it's on the path of devotional service. If it's on taking shelter of the other energy of the Lord, the material energy, then it's on the path of material sense gratification, which is basically the path of the asura. Mogasha, moga karmana, moga jnana vichetasaha, Rakshasim Asurim Chaiva Prakritim Mohinam Mohinim Shritaha. So the Prakritim Mohinim means the illusory potency of the Lord, Mahamaya. So if the jiva becomes attracted to the Prakritim Mohinim, the illusory potency, then such a soul finds mogasha. Its hopes for enjoyment are always being frustrated because they are subjected to the threefold miseries of nature, the adi atmic klesha. Klesha means disturbance or pain. So there are pains that come from the material body and the material mind, in other words, from the Atma. Then there are Adibhautika Klesha. Adibhautika means comes from other bhutas, other species of life. So the human species of life, in the human species, we can be threatened by other species of life or other living entities, including other humans, can attack. Mosquitoes can attack, alligators, crocodiles, different kinds of bacteria. You know, they all threaten us. And then there's adidaivika, the so-called acts of God. So miseries can come from the self, the Atma, from other living entities, the Bhutas, and from the demigods. Ultimately, you know, there are things that happen like earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes, fires. All these things can threaten one. So mogasha, asha means one has a hope to enjoy somehow. One makes a plan for permanent happiness in this material world, but it's always going to be frustrated in some way. Mogasha, moga karmana. One builds things. One builds a big company, builds a house, builds a castle. Whatever one builds in this material world, whatever one tries to accumulate by working, it's all eventually going to be destroyed. Moga jnana vicheta saha. Whatever theory one has, whatever explanation one tries to give, it's ultimately going to be frustrated. You know, like scientists are trying to describe how did life come about. You know, they try to explain it in some material way. Last night I was on a radio show. They were asking me about some discoveries that have been made in South Africa. You know, they're always finding some new evolutionary missing link or something like that. They find them at a place called, what they call, the Cradle of Humanity in South Africa. It's a place where many excavations have been carried out. And you go there to this place, and there's a museum that you enter before you visit the different places where archaeologists have made discoveries that supposedly support the theory of evolution. And they ask, when you go into the museum, there's a big sign that says, "Discover yourself." Now, that's a good thing. People should try to understand who they are. But the answer that they give to that question is totally materialistic. You go in and you find, what are you? They quote a scientist who says, "You're a robot vehicle meant to preserve the selfish molecules known as genes." In other words, you're just a machine made of molecules in competition with others for survival. But they've never explained how you just start with chemicals and get something like a human being, or even a simple single-celled creature. They can't explain that, because any theory that they try to come up with is always going to be frustrated. They'll never come up with a solution in that way. So, this is the condition of the asuras, because they're taking shelter of Krishna's material energy rather than his spiritual potency. Mahatmanas tu mam partha. Diving Prakritim Ashrita. The Mahatmas, the real great souls who are deserving of our respect. I mean, there are so many people today who falsely claim respect and leadership positions in society, but they're not actually qualified to lead because they can't deliver their followers from the cycle of birth and death, birth, death, old age, and disease in this material world. That's what a successful leader is able to do. So they're not really Mahatmas. You know, they think the Mahatmas are the Nobel Prize winning scientists, the leading politicians, those are the Mahatmas. But the real Mahatmas are those that take shelter of Krishna's spiritual potency. And that potency ultimately is Srimati Radharani. Like we chant every day the Hare Krishna mantra. That's an appeal to the Lord, to the Lord's spiritual potency, Hara. It's in the vocative, it's Hare. It's an address to, ultimately, to Srimati Radharani. So this is Daivi Prakritim. Srila Prabhupada says that directly several places in his purports and lectures, that this Daiva Prakritim that the Mahatmas take shelter of is ultimately Srimati Radharani. That's the potency of devotional service. So these descriptions are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. What is a devotee? What is a demon? You know, who is Sura? Who is Asura? Those descriptions are there. Like in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a whole description of the divine and the demoniac natures. And starts out with the same lines that are there in the Padma Purana. Dvabhuta sargo lokasmin divasura eva cha. So in the 16th chapter, it's stated, yes, there have always been in the creation these two types of living entities, the suras and the asuras, the devotees and the demons. Of course, as we're learning here, just because one is born in the family of asuras doesn't mean one can't become a devotee. So, Prahlad, you know, he takes birth in a family of asuras. You know, son of Hiranyakashipu, is a great asura. And one thing that I find interesting is that the asuras, they can understand, some of them, that the soul is different from the body. Like Hiranyakashipu, you know, he was trying to console the relatives of Hiranyaksha, you know, his brother who had been killed by Lord Varaha, and he's preaching to them, you're not the body. An asura can be a practitioner of Varnashram Dharma. You know, like Jarasandha, he was giving charity to the Brahmins and, you know, behaving according to Kshatriya principles. So one can be a follower of Varnashram Dharma. One can believe that I'm not the body, I'm the spirit soul, but still be an asura. But anyways, in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the nature of the asura, the demon, is being described. Asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahur an ishvaram aparaspara sambhutam. I forgot the last line. Yeah. So that means the asura thinks there's no God in control. Jagat Ahur Anishwaram. The universe is without any controller. It's just out there. Anybody can use it, do anything they want with it, with the resources. It doesn't belong to anybody. We can use it forever we want. It's like satyam apratishtam te. It means it has no source. So those are, that's the mentality of the asuras. No God in control. Everything is our property. Doesn't belong to anybody. We can use it any way we like because there's no purpose to the whole thing. Actually, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic philosophy in general, the universe does have a purpose. It's a place where souls that are not fit to exist in the spiritual world can become qualified to exist there. And why would they want to do that? Because that's where the soul can fully express its nature, which is that it's eternal, full of knowledge, and full of spiritual pleasure. And it can experience full satisfaction. People are looking for love and satisfaction and peace and prosperity. That can only be experienced in the spiritual world where the soul exists in its eternal relationship with Krishna. So that's why we would want to be qualified to go there. And that's actually how you judge the success of a culture, a civilization, a nation. How many souls are graduating to the spiritual level of reality? Because this universe, it exists, not just this universe, but many millions of universes that emerge from the body of Mahavishnu, who lies in the causal ocean, sleeping. It's in yoga nidra, not the kind of sleep that I engage in, which is a plunge into the mode of ignorance, but a transcendental sleep. And he's breathing in and out. And when he breathes out, millions of universes emerge. And when he breathes in, the universes enter him. When he breathes the universes out, they expand. He, by his glance, injects conditioned souls, souls not fit to exist in the spiritual world, into those universes. And he expands himself into those universes as the Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, from whose navel a lotus sprouts, and Lord Brahma takes his birth on that lotus, and Lord Brahma manifests the kinds of bodies and planets that are the habitations of the conditioned souls, and then they have a choice. They have free will because Krishna is not going to force anybody to return to the spiritual world. It has to be voluntary. That's why devotional service is voluntary. Nobody is being forced to stay in this temple. Everybody is here voluntarily. Nobody is going to force someone to do devotional service. It's voluntary because it has to be voluntary. Love cannot be forced. It has to be voluntarily agreed to and carried out. So Krishna is offering that opportunity to everyone, but because every soul has its free will, some choose to take advantage of the opportunity of the human form of life to practice devotional service, try to qualify oneself to enter Krishna's Nitya Lila. Those are the devotees. Then there are others who maintain this attitude of, I am an independent enjoyer. There's nothing that can control me. And sometimes Krishna allows them to fulfill their desires, not ultimately, in the ultimate sense. Krishna is there to Vinashayata Dushkritam. You know, I destroy the demoniac. Eventually he'll do that. But sometimes he lets them, like Hiranyakashipu, conquer the universe. Bali Maharaj, another great personality among the demons, he conquered the universe. So, but because they're taking shelter, not of Krishna's diving prakriti, but mohinam prakriti, the illusory potency, eventually they're frustrated. So this is being described here. There's Diti. She's giving birth to two great asuras, but she's conscious that by doing that, the demigods are going to be disturbed. So she tries to postpone the birth of these two asuras. So we all have to choose. I mean, everyone in the universe who's in a human body has to choose which path they're going to follow, the path of the asuras or the path of devotional service. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments?
It doesn't seem to me to be black and white. So how is this statement to be understood? Is it black and white? And those are, is it really, is, you know, black and, like it says here, one class is a demon, one class is a devotee? Or is it sort of shades of gray?
Well, obviously it's kind of shades of gray. There are grades of devotional service, and it's not a matter of birth, it's by one's qualification. And even among the devotees, there are different grades. You know, there's the Uttama Adhikari, the Madhyama Adhikari, the Kanishta Adhikari, the Sakama devotees and the Akama devotees, you know, like the demigods. Even they have some motivation. They may not be completely, totally free of a desire to, you know, they have some slight desire to control and enjoy. So therefore, you know, they're in those positions. So, yeah, and among the demons are different grades as well, and some of them become devotees. So Narada Muni has recommended that you have to be judged according to your activities, and the topmost is to be a pure devotee, attain the platform of pure devotional service. So therefore we pray to Nrisimhadev to enter our hearts and destroy whatever asuric tendencies there are within the heart. I don't know who it is, but someone said that in previous ages, the devotees and the demons existed on different planets, and then later on in another yuga, they existed in different...
Same planet, but different places.
Different parts of the planet. And in Kali Yuga, they exist within the same heart. So I think you're right. It's not 100% black and white. There are different shades within each category, and even the categories kind of mix a little bit.
Thank you. But they're still called the fact that says ones who obey and one who does not obey.
Yes.
The statement is some are demons and some of them are not. So the one that you describe and the question that he asks is they are devotees, but they're not might necessarily be, you know, at the highest platform. But they're still devotees. They follow in that category of the ones who obey.
Yeah, I mean, Srila Prabhupada once said that all his devotees are pure devotees, but some are in an unripe state. Like a mango is a mango, but if you have a green mango, it's not yet ripe, so it has to ripen. So if one is following the orders of the bona fide spiritual master, which are in harmony with, you know, it said there should be guru, shastra, and sadhu. They should agree. So if we're following those instructions, then even if we haven't yet attained the perfect state, then we'll make progress. And eventually attain the pure state by Krishna's mercy, not just by our own individual effort, but Krishna's mercy also has to be there. Anything else? Okay.
Thanks for a very nice class, Dutta Karma Prabhu. I just wanted to ask you, so when does a demon come to the conclusion that this life is worthless, painful, difficult, and a waste of time, and start his devotional life, even at the smallest degree? There must come a time when there's a turning point, because as you just mentioned, even a demon can gradually rise and become a devotee. So when does that time come? When he actually comes to that realization that I'm wasting my life, that this is worthless, useless? Perhaps you can enlighten us on that point.
Well, you know, I wasn't born in a devotee family. You know, it's, I mean, Srila Prabhupada kind of came to deliver the most fallen. So I would say, if I look at my own life as an example, yeah, one has to become frustrated. Like I was explaining, there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, moga sha, moga karmana, moga jnana vichetasaha. Yeah, I could say I was looking. You know, I had my hopes for material happiness, material success, material relationships. So moga sha. And then moga karmana, I thought I was doing all the right things, you know, trying to go to college, qualify myself to be a good materialist. And those became materially frustrated. moga jnana vichetasaha, always trying to find the right philosophy, the right understanding, but following the material path of knowledge. And it was frustrated. So then, I mean, that often has to happen. That's true. Yeah, I was looking for success at or happiness at a Grateful Dead concert, and some devotee gave me a Bhagavad Gita. And then, I mean, the impetus for seeking happiness is there, but if you're looking in the wrong place, and then somehow or other you get the mercy, and you start looking for it in the right place. You know, if you're looking for knowledge, and then you find it in Bhagavad Gita, that it really this knowledge really satisfies me. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And so, you know, like Krishna says, "Yasya hamanugrinami harishi tadanam shanai," for those who I'm being merciful to, I take away whatever remaining material desires and plans they may have. But you must have some insight into this, too, if you want to share it.
Thank you. I entered this field, especially this movement, under different conditions. I was actually a Mayavadi sannyasi, and I had come into Prabhupada's movement in a state of tremendous frustration, although I was experiencing some degree of joy, some degree of pleasure, lots of light, lots of expanse, lots of sense of infinity, but I felt that there must be something more than this. This is limited. And I had heard that those persons who learn to worship, adore, bow down to, look up to Krishna are full of bliss. And they don't stop being full of bliss. It's an eternal accomplishment or acquirement. So they had something I didn't have and which I wanted to have. Yes, I didn't want emptiness. I didn't want dullness. I didn't want just light. I wanted some kind of fulfillment, the fulfillment of eternal bliss, meaning the love that comes from God and floods your whole being and keeps you flooded because you continue to stay in love with God.
Okay, we had another question here or comment.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a nice class. I just wanted to mention how I understand what Prabhupada was saying about Brigapati's point. And, you know, when Prabhupada says very clearly that there's two types of living entities, in that point he's talking about the extremities, and in between you have the huge spectrum of grey area between the two extremities. And if we understand it in that way, it's very easy to understand how, you know, the soul can move its position because it's on a spectrum. It's not a black and white thing, although it's black and white at the far ends.
Yes. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.